Hey all, it's your host Christina, back again, and all I can say is, whoa, 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 it has been over 2 years since I've talked to you all, and so much has changed, both in my life and in the world. Things have felt really heavy and overwhelming for a long time, for me and for a lot of other people. We've all heard in the news and through social media, in our classrooms and from our loved ones about how our futures just feel uncertain and unstable. For me, when things feel uncertain, I have a tendency to let fear swallow me up. I imagine every single thing that can go wrong and then multiply it. But this season on Seats at the Table, I'm trying to switch things up. I'm diving into the fear so that we can figure out how to move through it together. I'll be talking to people who are wading through their own fears and femifesting, a term we'll soon get into, a different way of moving throughout the world. So, if you're ready, we'll get started right after our trusty theme song.
5, 6, 7, 8. Oh my God. What's up? Oh my God. Tell me. Oh my God. What is it?
Seats at the table.
Okay, hi Christine. I'm so excited to have you on the pod today. So if you would like to first just introduce yourself to our listeners, who are you? Who is Christine?
Yeah, well, first, thanks so much for having me. Such an existential question to open up the podcast. I'm Christine Zhuang. I am a Taiwanese American first gen daughter of immigrant parents. I live in San Francisco, California, which is formerly known as Ohlone Land. Who am I? Christina, you and I have known each other since college, so I feel like we've seen each other through many iterations of our life. I work in nonprofit with family and children. I'm doing child abuse prevention work in my full-time job, and then I moonlight by working in nonprofit with Asian American organizations and just really trying to empower like our next generation of AAPI leaders to really own our fullness and explore like who we are, our history, how we show up, issues that affect us. So that's pretty much what I do. I've also become a really serious plant parent during COVID, as I'm sure many other folks have.
Thanks for that great intro, Christine. I think it's so interesting that we have known each other for so long, because I feel like when you know people for a long period of time, you kind of only know them in a certain way. But with you, I feel like we've transitioned so much throughout our lives together. And I feel like this is so gushy to say, but I feel like I constantly fall in love with you all the time. Like, it's so weird to think about that, especially in the context of like friendships, and people don't say like, oh, I fall in love with my friends. Like, that's not something that we ever say. Like, we say we love our friends or like we love our family, but we never talk about like falling in love with our friends. And I feel like I've fallen in love with you in the past like 2 years, even though we've been friends since like 6 years ago. Is that so weird? Is that weird?
No, I don't think that's weird at all. I think that's really beautiful. I mean, one, I'm just honored. I love that. Give me more love.
Yeah.
But two, I think that's really beautiful because I think there are more complex emotions and love, like experiences of love that we have than just our romantic partners, and that can feel actually really limiting. Explore like just really, really loving and falling in love with our friends. I feel the same. I'm always like so just amazed and inspired by everything you're doing constantly, and yeah, the depth of our friendship. And even though much has changed, I think a lot has also stayed the same. Like, I think we both bring out just like, I feel like our inner child like love to play together, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we bring that out of each other, and also our commitment to social activism, to bettering our communities, to serving our communities, to understanding what that looks like in a holistic and healing way. I don't think those things have changed.
Yeah, whenever I talk about hanging out with my friends, sometimes I'll say like, oh, let's hang out. But a lot of times I'll be like, let's play together. And people a lot of times are like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, I just want to play. Like, I want to play with my friends. And I think we don't discuss like our hobbies or things like that as adults as like play. But I think that's sort of how whenever I hang out with you, I'm like, oh, I'm going to play with Christine. Like, it's just like hanging out and being silly. Yeah. So let's go back to what you said about social justice and social activism, because I think that is actually what brought us together. Like, we met through a student organization that was also a nonprofit. And I think you're right. That's sort of remained the core of our friendship, is like our connection to social issues and social justice broadly. So can you talk to me a little bit about like what social justice means to you, and like why do you have this connection to those concepts?
So many deep, big questions.
We're going deep, Christine. It's after work, so we're gonna go into it.
Yeah. Well, I think I can speak to my connection to it first. So I identify as Asian American, specifically Taiwanese American, and I grew up in Palo Alto, which is a very white, very affluent city. And being the daughter of immigrant parents, you know, my dad is very typical immigrant story. My dad moved here for school. He went to Stanford. My mom followed suit. We were very blessed that we were able to rise above a lot of like the economic hardships that other immigrant families have gone through. As an adult, I look back and see like how happy my childhood was, how blessed I was, despite being an Asian American and identifying as a female, which I think oftentimes we see like minorities or people of color culture and women as like more marginalized minorities. I feel like I've actually been very, very blessed in my life. I feel like I've had a lot of really incredible, strong role models as women, being in nonprofit, as a woman. I have had a lot of support. I have not felt necessarily the kind of discrimination that other folks have. And there's a part of me that feels like guilty around that, as someone who identifies with these different like minority or just marginalized groups, that I feel very committed to making sure that like everyone in our society and our communities like have the ability to live like a happy, full life and to be valued as human beings. And that like that is truly what we all deserve. Like, we all deserve to be seen and valued for who we are, and honoring the complexity of our identities for us just to be seen. And I don't think that our society does that right now. That's why I really care about it. Like, I want to live a life and leave a legacy where my descendants and my children are able to live in a world that is better than the one that we are living in right now. So that's a big part of what I care about. I think social justice really is creating a world where we are all able to live all of our lives matter. We are able to thrive. And I think right now that really means acknowledging the differences and the inequities that exist, and that they are many and that they are real, and that it takes us putting in work to acknowledge and honor that, so that we can really move towards equity and move towards the like life in the society that we want.
So beautiful, Christine. No, that's totally, you're like making the space. It's like, did that make any sense? And I think that definitely does make sense. And it's interesting because I feel like we haven't actually talked about like our personal backgrounds too much with each other, because similarly, like I also feel like I grew up without many hardships, in the sense of like I had a lot of financial stability from my parents. It was a loving household. I mean, like there were, as there are in a lot of Asian and Asian immigrant households, like some tensions around power and like discipline, like you need to do your math homework and go to Kumon and like all these things. But for the most part, like my parents are very loving, and like I don't think they really like did foster like individual agency in ways that I know a lot of my friends from Asian households and non-Asian households like didn't necessarily have that. And so I am really grateful to my parents for that. And so it's hard for me, or it has been hard for me even now to this day, like to reconcile not being from like a socioeconomically marginalized place, but also like empathizing with or like identifying with groups that are financially marginalized, racially marginalized, etc. So yeah, and not to say that like I didn't come across racism growing up, like I definitely did, but like if I'm thinking about like blatant institutional racism against me, it wasn't necessarily that. Like it was more kids on the playground being little assholes, or you know, that kind of thing. And not to like I guess operationalize the whole oppression Olympics ideology, but sometimes it does feel or has felt like, oh, should I be the one speaking up because like I didn't personally experience XYZ. Yeah, so that's sort of been a struggle, and I feel like that's something that you also speak to a little bit, in like why social justice matters to you even though you didn't personally experience certain things. There's this thing that you mentioned, or that has been like floating around in conversation in my head the past couple of weeks. We're part of a women's group together that you and another friend of ours invited me into, and since being part of that group, like what now, only a couple of weeks, like I feel like my mindset has really shifted, not about like what matters to me, but like how I operationalize what matters to me and like how I act in the world in order to realize my end goals and like my end aspirations. And it's this concept of femifesting, which I I'm giving you this happy look, which I like still am struggling with like how to verbalize that. So yeah, talk to me a little bit about femifesting, because you and a couple others in this women's group are the ones who really like talked about this and demonstrated it to me. So please enlighten our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, femifesting was a very new word, very new vocabulary to me as well when I joined this group. And at first I thought it was just the feminine version of manifesting, which I am like still, I would be totally down for that. But there is so much more depth to it. I think manifesting, you know, looking back into our country's history, like and thinking of like manifest destiny, we hear a lot of times folks saying like, oh, manifest your dreams, manifest what you want in your life. And it really speaks more to like, what do I want to have? What do I want to do? What do I want to accomplish, right? I want to manifest this dream job. I want to manifest this relationship. I want to manifest this really beautiful coat that I can wear around San Francisco when it's like forever foggy. Femifesting is different. It's still very much about wanting to bring your dreams to life and to fruition, but instead it's really leaning on like an innate feminine wisdom, I think, and asking questions of like, what do you feel? What do you want to feel? What are your values? What is like the world I want to create? How do I want to serve myself and the people around me? And that's very different, because I think a lot of times with manifesting, there's more of a masculine energy to it, but it's also very like concrete. Like, I want this thing. And sometimes we have to ask ourselves, like, what is it that we really want underneath that? Mm-hmm. So when you say like, I want this dream job, what about that job brings you joy? What about that job makes you feel fulfilled? What about that job do you value? And so I think femifesting is getting more to that element of it, like our values, how we want to feel, and bringing that into our lives. And what that might end up looking like is really different. I might think that I want a dream job as a marketer, because that is what I've always thought that I wanted. But when I lean into like manifesting my dreams, what I'm realizing is, oh, actually what I want is to tell stories. What I actually want is to amplify voices for folks and to be able to paint a picture of things that matter to other people. Now, how you manifest that dream, that feeling is so much more powerful than just saying like, I want this dream job as a marketer. And so I think with manifesting, it's really getting into like, what is the world that we want to create, that we want to live in, that we want to be in, that we feel the most alive in, and how do I bring those elements into my life? And really connecting with our heart, with our innate wisdom that we have within us, instead of just looking at kind of external things that we want to obtain or accomplish. And even though, you know, we say femifesting and we say feminine energy, it's definitely not just for women or for people who identify as female. I think there's this balance in all of us of this feminine and masculine energy. So it's really more of just leaning into the feeling and your values and like letting that really guide you. And I think ultimately that feels so much more fulfilling than just having a thing or having a job or having one concrete item.
Yeah. And I think that that's so hard for me, not because I don't like think about my feelings. I feel like I am a feeling oriented person, but I can't sit with my thoughts for too long because I just like think like, am I doing this right? Am I thinking about myself right? And I think manifesting is really challenging oneself to think deeply about like what your wants and needs are and like how what you do in your life will impact like the feelings that you have about yourself. So I'm just curious, like, because this is, I guess this is also sort of new-ish for you too, or like the concept of it is, like, how are you connecting this principle in your day-to-day and like your, like, how are you actualizing this kind of idea of manifesting?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think being in a society that really values what you produce, what you accomplish, a lot of times that's what you're measured by. You're from an Asian household. Oftentimes it's who you're married to, when you're married, how many kids you have, how big your house is. I'm not saying that those things are not important and that those things are not important and very valuable dreams to have. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's really getting down into more, and I think really connecting with like, what am I valuing here? Mm-hmm. And like, how do I bring that out? How do I bring out what is going to make me feel like my fullest self, make me feel the most fulfilled, and also then allow me to like be of the best service to the people around me and to my community? And I think that has been really transformative because, you know, I often get stuck in like, yeah, what do I want to do? And like, you know me, like I'm always doing like a million things.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I'm trying to figure out like what really makes me feel fulfilled. I think it's like working in nonprofit in a certain way, or I think it's like being a part of some political campaign or being socially active in some way and like protesting or helping to organize. And like, those are all important goals, but I think whereas I was feeling really scattered before because I was like, okay, I'm achieving this, mm-hmm. but I'm still not like quite getting what I'm wanting. I think with manifesting, it's been really helpful because I stop and think, okay, so what is it that I'm really wanting to feel from this experience? How do I want to feel? I want to feel like I am using my natural gifts and strengths to elevate my community. I want to feel that what I do is making a difference for myself, for people that I care about. What I really value is like seeing my community flourish. And I think when I'm able to connect with that, it feels really different than just oh, I'm like achieving these things, mm-hmm. or I'm doing these things that I can list. I think something else that's been really present for me is as we are heading into a huge presidential election, I think that goes without saying, I think there's really charged opinions and views from both sides. And, you know, I hear a lot of times, and I've said this myself, how much I don't want Trump to win, how much folks dislike him, or much more charged words than that. right, and I don't disagree, but I think it has felt very limiting for mm-hmm. me to just think about what I don't want, or to just say, you know, and so I think even in the midst of like this huge presidential election and so many other elected positions that are at stake, propositions that will affect communities, I've also really been shifting my mindset to think like, what are the values that I want to see embodied in our country, in our society? Like, how do I want our communities to feel? How do I want those who are marginalized to exist? How do I want to create and bring about that world? And I think connecting with those values first and saying, this is what I want to femifest. I want to femifest a world where all living beings are valued, where all living beings are able to thrive, where we prioritize and value children, we value education, we value people, whether they're born in the United States or they're not, we see people for the pain that they are currently going through and the generations of pain and trauma that they are holding and that they have been resilient through. Like, that's what I want to feel. Like, I want to feel like this unity and that, like, we can really exist together and lift each other up. And I think when I connect with that, I feel much more hopeful and I feel much more powerful and confident in how I use my vote. I know what the world is that I want to create. I'm going to vote in a way that gets me closer to that. And that to me feels much more inspiring than just saying, I don't want to vote for Trump. It's yeah. still true.
But you're centralizing the hope rather than the fear of what another Trump presidency would bring.
Yes, and I think it also opens my mind up to more possibilities and solutions than what we currently have. Mm-hmm. I think that also opens my mind up to more than just a two-party system. I think it opens my mind up to more than just what our current system is doing. And I think even just like allowing ourselves to ask those questions and explore, I think we then are giving ourselves an opportunity to maybe really create the world that we want to see that is not defined by what our current system looks like.
I think that brings up an important point, because something that I've been seeing in my social circles online and just like in the Twitter sphere, particularly like socialist Twitter sphere, or like very more radical like left debates or conversations, and also memes, because like they're prevalent everywhere, is this like idea of either settling for Biden and Harris, which is like, to some extent I agree, like I don't agree with like every single platform or policy or thing that either person has said. So this idea of settling for them because like that's the choice that we have in a two-party system, or this idea that like we shouldn't vote for either Trump or Biden because like morally there are disagreements but for both. And like what both represent, like either fascism for we know who, or just like neoliberal ideologies for Biden and Harris. I guess I'm curious for you, like, how does voting for a Democratic ticket present opportunities for expansion rather than settling? Because I think mm-hmm. that's something that I'm struggling with, or at least I'm struggling with vocalizing that and like pushing more radical peers of mine to be like, okay, well, I see what you're saying, but but a vote for Biden Harris is more than just settling.
Yeah, I hear you. And there's kind of, I have like a kind of a two-part answer. I think one, it's important for us to acknowledge for ourselves and for anyone who is listening to this podcast that you and I are both speaking about this and recording this from a space of like privilege and safety, right? Like our bodies are not at risk. Mm-hmm. Our freedom is not at risk. Our livelihood, our families are safe. And so I think this idea of femifesting and in general, right, of like us creating this better world, it's important. And also there are peoples whose lives are at stake now. There are Black bodies being killed now. There are Black trans bodies that are being violated now. There are children who have been separated from their families trying to cross into our borders to seek safety and refuge from issues that the United States has largely been a part of, for they've been apart for we don't even know how long, right? So there are issues right now that are affecting people's livelihoods, their literal lives, their freedoms. And so it is very important still that our, I think our social and political actions address that. So I think there is this level of urgency and reality of at this moment, we are realistically, in my opinion, looking at a Trump versus Biden nomination or election at this point. So that's the reality of it. And thinking about the reality of what happens when one or the other wins, how does that affect people whose lives are at risk presently? So I think that's one piece of how I approach it. And I think the other piece too of like approaching it from more of a femifesting lens is just being able to take a step back. Like this is like the vision boarding step. Mm-hmm. This is like before you write like your action plan.
You gotta get all the collaging materials together.
You gotta like get on Pinterest. Yes.
Yeah.
You gotta get on Pinterest. You gotta make your mood board. Like that's how I kind of see femifesting is like just really allowing ourselves and giving ourselves space to say like, yeah, what is the society that I envision? What are the values that are important to me? How do I want me and our country to feel? All of those things that we've talked about, and then saying, okay, how do I then take civic or political action in a way that's going to move me closer to that? And that may look different for different folks. But I think that's where like we go back to femifesting as kind of like this grounding of like, I want to femifest these dreams that I have for our country and the way that I am voting, again, in a realistic and practical sense with like the options that we do presently have. How do I vote in a way that gets us closer to that? And how do I actively work in my communities, in my circles to shift? So that we can really see these things and these values that I think a lot of us hold in this country like actually come to light.
I think like for me, and I think when I first got really like immersed in social justice and like reading about social issues like from a global perspective and not just like a US-centric perspective, I just like kept getting angry. And I feel like it's like, not to say that anger isn't necessary and an important emotion that drives change, but I think I was sitting in the anger for so long, I didn't know how to switch from anger to being like, okay, well, since I'm angry, but like, let's move towards a better situation for folks. And my former boss / mentor / friend, like after I left the nonprofit world and I was like starting to dip my toes into grad school apps, it gave me a lot more time to like read and be angry. And she told me one day, like this was several years ago, she was like, Christina, I think I'm like worried for you because your Facebook posts are just so angry. And like, I don't know what, like how you're handling your anger. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't register that that's what was happening. But I think upon reflection, I was like, I can now see that, yeah, I was sitting in the anger. I didn't know how to move from this like sense of despair to like action-oriented hope, which is like what I think femifesting is about, is like not just like mindless, like, oh yeah, everything's gonna be great and like we're just gonna vision board and everything's gonna be perfect, but I think it's a more, like you said, a grounded hopefulness that's like rooted in reality, but also connecting our aspirations to what a better world looks like, and not just this like deficit sort of mindset that I think that we've been living in with like, we just want Trump out, as like a deficit of Trump, versus what you're talking about is like this hopefulness and expansiveness of like what our country could be regardless of who the leader is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Another element I think of femifesting is really tapping into that feminine wisdom. And when I think of feminine wisdom, I think of more of like a nurturing, healing, more warmth, more lightness in how we approach things. I think when we look at a lot of social issues that are happening presently, there's a lot of like hardness, there's a lot of rigidity or force in how our country currently tackles certain issues. Oh, this is a problem, let's throw more money at it. Oh, this is an issue, let's see how we can push more people in like in this direction, right? And I mean, let's look at something like the prison system and mass incarceration.
Yeah.
And I know that's like a really huge topic. We're not gonna get too deep into it of how that started, because that's a whole nother podcast.
Which we can recommend some other podcasts.
Yes, which you can recommend to other folks. But if you look at how the prison and like policing and prison system started and how it has evolved until now, it's a very forceful way of dealing with a problem, right? You have broken the law, however the law is currently being defined. And because of that, we're going to lock you away. We're going to cut you off from connections, from support. We very rarely, if at all, acknowledge the systems or challenges or issues that have influenced why you have gotten to where you are. We're just gonna lock you up, throw away the key. Probably a lot of really not great things that are gonna happen to you while you're even in prison. And then when you come out, good luck. And then we expect folks to just like somehow get back into society. That's our solution right now. Or our solution, oh, there's more crime, we need more police. I mean, even one of the propositions that is on our California state ballot this election is on increasing what is considered a felony versus a misdemeanor. And for me with femifesting, I think about there is this issue, there is crime that happens in our country, there is violence, there are things that are not okay, of course. But what would it look like? Like, what is our ultimate goal with that? What's our value with that, right? We want to change that. We want to help people heal. We want to restore people, help people reconcile with themselves, with their communities, with those that they have hurt. That to me does not feel like throwing people into a dark cell for however amount of time. And studies have shown, right, that even with young kids in like preschool and elementary school, when they do something wrong, instead of sending them to detention, instead if they're doing mindfulness, instead if they're doing restorative justice, the likelihood that they're then going to come back into their class and be able to work through their emotions and to be better is much bigger than if you just continue to send them to be disciplined. So expanding that into our mass prison system, which California is one of the worst, when I think of femifesting, I think of how do we do that for our communities that are healing, that have gone through intense pain and trauma, and there's real hurt that has happened there. What would it look like for us to actually help restore people to their communities and help communities heal? So when I think of it in that sense, that I think, like you were speaking to, that expansiveness of like, yeah, how do we create that? I don't think that's just throwing more money at the problem, but it really, then we're thinking of all of these more progressive and different ways of addressing a really real social issue. But I think if we only look at it in binaries or look at it within the way that the current system works, then yeah, it's really hard because we feel really stuck. It obviously hasn't been working. So yeah, so I think that's just like one other way to kind of approach femifesting, is looking at it with just this like feminine wisdom and energy.
Yeah, that's a really great concrete example, because I think that like it sounds, again, I'm just thinking about all these like people who are like, oh, that sounds great, but like how do you actualize any of those things? And I guess I would just say like nothing happens overnight, but I think the shift in mindset and thinking, like reframing process, has to start sooner rather than later. Like I think even within like quote-unquote progressive communities, like this idea of femifesting or like principles of femifesting haven't become grounded yet, because a lot of folks I know who are organizers and who are sort of like quote-unquote in the trenches, like for good reason, they're burnt out and debilitated. And I think like shifting mindsets into thinking about problems, social problems, through a femifesting lens may make things not easier, but I guess easier to work through. Okay, I want to turn to sort of like some of the social problems or social issues that you prioritize for yourself, because there are tons of problems in the world, but I'm interested in like what are the things that you think or that you've been working on in your community and things that are like on your mind.
Many big questions. Something that has been really present for me is, and that I have really been working on and throwing more of my energy behind, is helping the Asian American community see how much our liberation is tied to Black liberation. And that Black liberation is tied to the liberation of all people of color, people of culture in the United States. That's felt like really important to me, because as an Asian American, like I never felt personally invested or like I cared about it. It felt like a faraway problem. And I think the more, what's been really beautiful for me is the more I learn about my history and the history of Asians in America, what they have gone through, how many similarities there are to the struggles of Black Americans in the past and even now, how many similarities there are to immigrants from Mexico, from Latin America, from South America, who are trying to find refuge here. How much a lot of the issues, like the huge big ticket issues that we see now, were originally kind of introduced to the United States by Asians who first came to America. Like those issues first affected us. The more I see that like our history and our current liberation, like true liberation, not just Asians assimilating to whiteness, mm-hmm. and Asians feeling like we're doing okay because we're the model minority and we get a pass. But real liberation, it's completely tied to the liberation of Black folks and brown folks and indigenous folks. I've been reading this book called The Making of Asian America by Erica Lee. Yeah, if you want to get real angry and raged, like this is the book. There's so much in there where you realize that racism, sexism, xenophobia, a fear of the other, they're literally woven into the fabric of how this country was created, and that Asians were very much a part of it. I think maybe not in number or severity in the same way as Black folks and Black Americans, but pretty close. Like there's a lot of similarities. So I think the more I learn about that, one, the more I see and appreciate how resilient our communities are, not just Asian communities, but all communities of color in America, and everything that we've had to overcome to get to where we are, to be succeeding and thriving despite what white folks have thrown at us and what like American society and government have put in our way to actively keep us from existing. And we've overcome all of that. I am just like in shock and in awe of of their resilience, that we are still here. So that's one. And then I think two, it really helps me to connect to the struggle of Black, Brown, and Indigenous folks now in a way where I don't think before I really understood. And so I think for me now, I really care about like that. Now as I'm understanding that, I think I really care a lot about helping my Asian American community to connect to that as well, and to really mobilize, my people, my community, to care and to be involved and to stand with Black, Brown, and Indigenous folks in solidarity. And I know that's like such a buzzword these days, but like really to embody solidarity, standing with, living with, suffering and struggling with Black, Brown, and Indigenous folks. And I really do think that like Asian Americans hold this unique tension of being both the oppressed and the oppressor in a lot of ways. And for us to really understand our own history, understand our own unique like makeup and struggle of being Asians in America, and to just, again, to really see our liberation tied with other folks. So that's something I really care about a lot right now. I know that's also at the forefront of a lot of really big social activism in this year as well. So it feels very relevant and top of mind.
Wow, thanks, Christine. That's like such a huge, like you said, it's such a huge topic. And I do think like in the last 3.5-4 years, there has been this sort of resurgence of discussions around Asian and Black solidarities, both East Asian, Southeast, and South Asian, but particularly like because we both identify as East Asian, I think, and like modern dialogue around Asian American centralizes East Asian. I think that that's been something in the back/front/everywhere of my mind, like literally just everywhere.
Yeah.
I know we're going back to feminvesting, but in terms of that as like a social issue that you care about, how are you sort of using feminvesting principles to impact like Asian Black solidarity, or like teaching Asian Americans about our rootedness in the U.S. and like connections to both oppression and being oppressors in certain contexts? Because for me, it's been like a huge struggle, and I just get frustrated, particularly like when I talk to people of my parents' generation. I feel like that there's like very selective remembering of some of the problems that we've gone through. I remember I got in this huge argument with my mom's college friend's husband, who they identify as Korean and Korean American, and we're at a restaurant, and like this is a public place, and like they're my elders, and they were talking about like migration and like undocumented folks, but they were using the terms illegal immigration, and I was just like, look, if we're gonna talk about illegal immigration, Asians are the ones who utilized quote-unquote illegal immigration through like paper sons, if you're like, for Chinese folks. And I was just like, so if you're gonna say illegal immigration, like we did it first. And they were just like, what are you talking about? No, we didn't. It's not the same thing. And I was like, how is it not the same thing? Like, what do you mean it's not the same thing? I was a little angry. This is my angry period. So I think I still haven't like been able to temper my anger or balance like the anger that guides me in sort of like why I'm passionate about certain things with careful understanding, because I also recognize I didn't come to these realizations overnight. Like it's been a process over the last like maybe 10 plus years of me like learning slowly and questioning and having people be patient with me when I asked questions. And so I guess I'm just curious like how you deal with that and if femifesting has helped you in that process.
Yeah, I feel you in the anger piece, especially around talking to our elders, because always so challenging. Must respect the elders, but also do not respect what you are saying right now.
Yeah, they definitely were like, you are disrespectful. And I think my mom was so embarrassed because it's like she hadn't seen them in years. And like the last time I met them, I was like a baby. So they were like, who is this teenager?
I think that there is an element of honoring the lived experience, and I think a lot of like oppression and trauma that folks have gone through in the Asian community, and that the way that that shows up looks really weird and different and confusing, not just to us, but sometimes like even to like our parents or our families or our elders. And I think when I think of femifesting, like, what do I want to femifest in how we are lifting up the Asian community? I want us to be able to really know intimately and heal from the wounds and the trauma that we have inherited from generations and generations of Asians that have come before us in America. They may not be my biological ancestors, but they are my activist ancestors, if you will. They're my social Asian ancestors who, like, their greatest form of resistance was surviving and pushing through so that, like, you and I can show up here today. And that's what I think about femifesting, that vision of like helping us to really know and understand and heal from, because we presently, even though we may not have gone through a lot of those things, we may not know it intellectually or consciously, our bodies know it, our systems know it. So they remember it. And I think it's about bringing that consciousness forward and recognizing that we as an Asian American, like, we are not white and we are not Black. And what I would love, and what I, the world that I want to create, is a world where Asian Americans are able to own our own stories, our own narratives, to be able to like really live into that fully. And I think when we do that, then we are able to just like not try so hard to fit in one way or the other. For me, I think that's where a lot of the tension comes from, is like, we know we don't want to be treated like the Black community or the Brown community. Like, we know that. I think if you were to ask any Asian person, they would probably be like, yeah, I do not want that for myself or my family. And I think we all, for the most part, as people of color, also acknowledge that if you are white, if you are male in this country, like, you are treated better. There's more opportunities for you. You are able to succeed more. And so I think Asians also try to align with whiteness because it has benefited us in many ways. So for me, I see, instead of trying to convince folks in one direction or the other, what I want is for us to actually just know and own our own stories. And I think when we are able to do our own healing, we're then able to connect and see the importance of helping others and connecting with others. And yeah, and I also just want to say, like, I totally get it too, because in my day-to-day job, like, I'm also one of those people who is more in the trenches working with families, and the system cannot change fast enough. Like, we see our family struggling, and like, I want change to happen like yesterday. So I totally get it. And I get that, like, it's frustrating because, again, there's people who are suffering and struggling now. We cannot afford for the system to wait and for us to figure it out. But I also think that it is important for us to recognize that a lot of the pain and suffering that we see in the world comes from unhealed trauma and pain that we continue to hold, and that has been passed down to us, that we are just then pushing out to other folks and like continuing to maintain in the systems that we live in and the governments we live in and our relationships with each other and how we have internalized that. And so what I would love is, like, again, for us to be able to heal from that. And I think ultimately when we start doing that, then we can also begin to heal the systems that are around us and that we uphold and live in.
Such a beautiful, beautiful response, Christine. Thank you. So I'm curious, what are some things that you do to ground yourself, to maintain clarity and motivation?
Yeah, so important. I am the worst at self-care. I'm okay with having that documented because I need some accountability in my life. I think something that helps to keep me grounded is that while systems do need to change and systems are harmful and destructive, behind systems are real people who are living and breathing and trying to survive and struggling and succeeding, and people matter. Every individual person is important and they matter. And I think oftentimes when I get really discouraged looking at like a system or trying to like change these really huge archaic ways of being, I remember that ultimately what I'm trying to do is I am trying to create a better world for real people that I know, who I care about. And so I think it's, I try to get just more rooted and grounded in my communities and yeah, and like building meaningful relationships, getting to actually know people in their stories. I think I can yell at somebody who is a really, you know, to overgeneralize, but a really like conservative Republican who has views that I disagree with all I want to on Facebook or like on whatever other cool social media apps there are these days. Or like I could have a conversation with people in my direct network who I actually have a relationship with and where we can actually talk about these things. And I think that helps me to feel more grounded. Like, for example, in this election, there's a lot of moments where I felt really hopeless and frustrated and angry and felt like, you know, nothing's ever gonna change because everyone's just always gonna like be stuck in what they believe in. And then this weekend, I helped my mom register to vote for the first time in the like 20 plus years that she's lived in America. And I don't think anyone else could have done that for my mom, right? Like I'm in a unique position. She also can't get rid of me because I'm her daughter. I don't know, that one voter registration has, it means more to me than anything else because that's a real person, that's my mom. Mm-hmm. And like, I care about her and her life and yeah, and what she thinks and how she understands the world that we live in. So I think sometimes when systems are frustrating and we need the people that are gonna fight them and challenge them and change them, I think it just also is very grounding for me to connect with people, like real people, real communities. And I feel very fortunate to be able to do that in my work every day also. Yeah, something else I've done very intentionally is to not watch the news all the time because it is not helpful. It is very, I think, absurd and like not natural for us to be receiving so much information all the time, especially information that is like really upsetting. Like 2020 has been a dumpster fire. Our brains and our bodies and our hearts cannot deal with how much horrifying, sad, heartbreaking news that is coming out on a regular basis. Yeah. I've just had to say like, I can't and I won't. Like I know the big things and it's fine. For me personally, and I know this is like, not everybody may agree with this, I just stop watching the presidential debate because if they're not gonna change my mind. Like I'm not gonna watch it and all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, actually maybe Trump is like really great. And I know that for me, like, I don't need that energy. It will just make me more upset and frustrated. Mm-hmm. So those are like small self-care ways that, or self-care things that I've done just to try and protect my own heart and my own sanity a little bit more. And then true to every millennial living in the city right now, I have bought an absurd amount of plants and just try to take care of my plant babies.
Yeah, as you're oxygenating your living space. I think that's important. Yeah, what you talked about with the media is, I think, really interesting because I think it was a tweet or something that I saw like a year or two ago that was just like, human minds were not built for seeing so much trauma 24/7, like on such a regular basis. Like, social media has done great things because we can become aware of a lot of things, but also human resilience, like, we weren't built as humans to be able to withstand that much. And I can really see how that's true through, I feel like for the younger generation, not that we're that old, but the generation that's like, was born into the internet, like, you know, we grew up when there was still dial-up, or like pre-internet also, like when we were born there was no internet, which is like insane for some of my cousins, like they don't understand what that means. But I can see how like disconnected they are because they're just bombarded with negative media reports, negative like disinformation, all these things. Yeah, and there's also the podcast that you shared with me with Brené Brown and Sonia Renee Taylor, who I'll link that podcast in the information box and in my story notes. But they talked about like disengaging from the media as like a form of radical self-love. And I was like, what does that mean? And then they talked more about it, and I thought more about it, and I was like, yeah, engaging in certain media stories that are consistently negative and don't embody like a mindset of femifesting. They didn't use that term, but like I kind of link the two together. Like that doesn't bring about hopeful change, or it won't bring about hopeful change if we keep glued to this sort of negative information cycle. Thanks for sharing that with me.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Sonia Renee Taylor is the author of this really incredible book called The Body Is Not an Apology. And it really, it's all about radical self-love, but I love her book because there's a million radical self-love, self-help, self-confidence like books out there. Mm-hmm. But this really isn't so much about that. And she really connects radical self-love actually to like social justice and to like dismantling the system. Like, what? Mom? I am shooken. What is this magical wisdom that I have never received yet, but have needed my whole life? So yeah, it's really incredible. And I think, again, a lot of what we've been talking about actually really gets into the heart of femifesting, mm-hmm. right? Which is, yes, there are systems that need to be changed. There are laws that are not helpful. There are real issues and atrocities that are happening around our country. And also at the end of the day, it comes back to like people, like me, like you, like whoever's listening, and our real struggles to understand and reconcile like our own identities, how we exist in the world, pain and trauma that we have gone through, how we're healing through it, how we are experiencing other people moving through their own stuff and trying to heal, and maybe not doing it in the best way, or we're not doing it in the best way. And so I think with femifesting, again, it gets down to that core of like my, like me knowing and understanding myself and what I want to be, how I want to feel, how I want to heal, so that I can also create, so I can create that in my inner world and then bring that into my outer world and into my community. And I think that is a huge part of what manifesting is. I personally believe that ultimately, like, that is how we create huge change, is by really changing like our own hearts and how we see ourselves, how we're able to live into our fullest self, and then bring that into our communities, into our relationships. And all of those important things. So
yes, 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 yes. Thank you, Christine, for joining me for this conversation. It's been really illuminating, and I really loved spending this hour with you, and hopefully your listeners loved it as well.
Yeah, I believe that we're just at such a crucial time in our nation's history, in our society's history, where how we show up really matters. And in a time that feels really dark, where it's hard to have leaders that inspire us, I think it is all the more important for us to look to ourselves for the answers and to create the world that we really do want to see, that we want to live in, and that we want to thrive in. And so, yeah, I hope, you know, just opening your heart or your mind up to some of fasting and seeing things in this new perspective. I hope it sparks something for each of you within yourself so that we can really collectively, yeah, bring about change that we really need. So thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Well, listeners, thank you so much for joining me for this first episode of the season. Hopefully, Christina and my discussion about femifesting has opened up some new avenues of thinking and dreaming about our collective futures and what it will take to get there. For some inspiration, I also asked some previous guests of the pod what they imagined when they envisioned the future, and here's what one of them had to say.
Hello everyone, my birth name is Yushen Xiao and my nickname is Soleil, and for our collective future, I envision more collective joy. I envision more room to express joy and more forms of expressing joy, because one consequence of living under oppressive systems that we have in today's society is that these systems rob us of our fundamental ability to experience and share joy. So if we had a more visible forms of joy, it would not only be itself an act of resistance, but it would also be an indicator that we're moving away from oppressive systems and moving into futures of liberation. For our collective futures, I also envision more transformative relationships. I envision deeper relationships of authentic substance and connection, because another way that oppressive systems we have today affect us is that these systems change the way we relate to each other. We have more relationships based on competition rather than transformation. So if we had different relationships in the future, if we had relationships based on mutual love and based on interdependence and collaboration and friendship and community, these will all be indicators that we're moving into collective futures of liberation.
Now, the US has a major election coming up on November 3rd, which is only several days away from the time I'm releasing this session. Those who are eligible and able to safely vote have the chance to shift the current state of our country. We have the ability to shake off the fear, pain, and frustrations that come with living under so much uncertainty. We have the chance to make a different kind of future. My hope for you, dear listener, is that you can take the time and energy for yourself to really think about the kind of future you want to live in and what it will take to get there. So last thing, take a deep breath with me. You can close your eyes if you want. Think about how you want to feel on November 4th. What about in January 2021? What kind of future do you want to live in so that you and your loved ones will be happy, healthy, and safe from racism and economic deprivation or anything else that causes us harm and makes us suffer? Think about it, envision it, and then vote in a way that will help us get there to that better future. It won't be easy, but I'm hopeful that it's possible. And with that, I'll be here next month. Until then, give yourself permission to pause, keep breathing, and start femifesting. I'm sending you off with so much love. Bye.